Started.
Would you rather have separate seating, mixed dancing?
Hey, have to compromise on something.
I like that.
Okay, welcome to another session of Why Do We Do That? So I wanted to continue here, food part two, and talk about challah. You can talk about food forever and ever and ever and ever. So I want to talk about challah, and if we have time at the end, I also read some stuff about kreplach. There's not a lot of information about kreplach. But there's a little bit, so I'll tell you what I found. It's only on mine because I wrote it there with the pen. Okay, so let's start with challahs. Challahs, there's a lot of different nuances to what's going on with challahs. I'll go through some of, or as many as I could think of. Hopefully this will cover everything. The first thing is to talk about how many challahs. We know that we use two challahs at a meal. What is that about, and where is it from? So this is, I mean, if it's commonly known or not commonly known, the Torah, I guess we'll backtrack instead. In general, in the laws of bracha, when I'm making a bracha on bread, so there's all kinds of factors that come into play. If I have a variety of options in front of me, which piece, which thing do I make the bracha on? So different kinds of grain have different levels of standing. Wheat is generally considered to be more fine than, let's say, barley flour. It's not so common today to find barley bread or spelt or something else. And a whole piece of bread, a whole loaf, is preferable to a piece. And then you get really complicated. What if you have a barley loaf, but you have a piece of wheat bread, and it gets all kinds of... And your own intentions, your own desires also get mixed in. So it's a whole cholent of possibilities of what you're going to make a bracha on. But everybody agrees, this is the Gemara says, everybody agrees that on Shabbat you have to take two loaves, two challahs, whatever, and you have to use two of them when you make the meal. So in contrast to the rest of the laws of brachas, where we're trying to figure out what to do, here everyone agrees you need two. Why do we need the two? So the Torah describes the story of the man. When the Jews were coming out of Egypt, God provided man for them, and the man was basically like an educational lesson that the Jews would take it every day, and they couldn't take it for the next day. If they tried and keep it for the next day, it would spoil, and so they had to take it every day. And the lesson was, God is providing food for you every single day. You don't have to store it until the next day, because even if it's the next day, it's still God providing the food for you on the next day, so you have to keep it day by day, except on the sixth day of the week when they would have to take a double portion because the man wouldn't fall on Shabbat. That's basically the idea. So in the course of that description, the Torah says, Vayihi bayom hashishi, this is in source number one, Laktu lecha mishne shnei ha'omer le'echad. On the sixth day of the week, they would take a double bread, or double the amount of bread. Double the amount of bread. Two omer, which is a certain volume, right? The man was not in loaves, it was like, I don't exactly know, but some granulated stuff that was on the ground, and you have to pick it up. And they would take two omer per person. Normally speaking, it was one omer per person per day. And this would sustain them through the end of, through Sunday morning, because there was no man that fell on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, on that basis, in source number two, Amar Rabbi Abba, B'Shabbat chayv adam livtzoa al shtei kikarot, dichtiv lechem mishnah. On Shabbos, a person is supposed to take two breads. He must break bread. The word livtzoa is used in two different ways throughout the sources that we're going to see now. One of them is just a general definition of the practice of breaking bread. You make a meal, you establish a meal, you start a meal on bread, so you break bread. It's still an English term. People do that, right? And the other is to actually break the bread, which we'll see. There's breaking bread as like a sort of theoretical reference to making a meal, and there's breaking bread as I took the bread and I broke it into two or more pieces. So a person has to take two loaves every Shabbos because it says lechem mishnah. You have to take double the bread. The question that emerges, people ask here, is what exactly is going on? They took double man on Friday morning, right? They took two units of man. By the time they got to Friday night, how much man was left?
Should be one.
Half.
Right, half, just one of the units. They didn't have two at night, right? We're starting Shabbos, we're coming with two loaves, we're saying, oh, it's like they did in the desert. They had two. But they didn't have two by Friday night. They only had one. The whole point was that they ate one of them during the day on Friday, and the other one was for Saturday. So why exactly are we taking two of them at Shabbos? That's not what happened on Shabbos. What is going on? So here, and it's very terse here, so it's not exactly clear this is what he means, but the Ritva, one of the medieval commentators, the Rishonim, says, Klomar zecher leman sheya kaful. It's to recall the man which was doubled. I think the point is, though it's not entirely clear, as maybe we'll see afterwards, but the point is not that we're trying to reenact what they did. They're reenacting the process. Just like in the desert, on Shabbos night they had two, we're also taking two. The point is, that the taking of the two loaves is symbolic of our understanding that God will give us a double portion enough for Shabbos every week. That's included in whatever God gives us. We're taking a day off from working. We're abstaining from working, producing things for a day. We shouldn't have to worry about it, and you shouldn't feel like I can't have a nice meal, whatever. You should just have the nice meal because God is taking care of you and providing it. Yeah.
Where did we get that it was two loaves as opposed to just double the portion? Because you can take double the portion and make one loaf, or you can take double the portion and make two loaves. Where does it say that? Like, why do we derive that it had to be two loaves as opposed to just a larger loaf?
Yeah, so the Torah is not talking about bread at all, right? Man is not bread. It's, I don't know, they put it in a jar. So there really was a double portion. I think that that the idea is it's much easier to show the symbolism of double if you have two breads than if you have one bread which is twice as big as, I guess, you would normally make a bread. Right, because maybe people have different practices. Some people may make a smaller bread during the week or a bigger bread. If you have double bread, that's a little bit more abstract than having the double loaf. And sometimes we find that that's true. In certain circumstances, you're allowed to have, not always, but in the Sudash Lushit, if you're stuck and you can't find. So some people say you can, as long as you have one full loaf and some other little piece from a different loaf, that's okay, because that already shows you that there's two going on. It's two separate things. Two things are happening. So, yeah.
So why are we showing, I understand Friday night, two loaves, but we use one loaf. So why at Shabbos lunch, why do we again use two loaves? Why do we, now should we have half one loaf?
Right, so again, I think it's the same idea. It's because we're not reenacting what happened. We're saying that all the meals on Shabbos, we are creating this symbolism that we understand God provided for what we have, and even though we're not working, this is it. I mean, it also involves the symbolism of the whole week. God's always providing for what we have on a daily basis, but also on Shabbos. I think that's the idea. So we have to take two. Okay, great. So we have to take two. How many of the two do you cut up when you say hamotzi?
One.
So that's general practice, is one. But as we'll see, it's not clear. And some people don't. Some people, interestingly, cut two or more.
Well, if you need it, you cut it.
Well, for sure, if you need it, you should cut it. But even if you don't need it,
see.
Yeah, so we'll see this right now. If you look at source four... What, pardon?
Baker's Union.
Yeah. It's good. It's they're sponsored this line. Amar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, this is the immediately following comment. We saw before, you have to take two loaves of bread, because the Torah says, Lechem Mishneh. Then Rav Ashi says, Chazina le l'Rav Kahana, I saw Rav Kahana when it was Shabbos and he was eating, Denakat tarte ubatzachada, he took two loaves in his hands, but he only broke one of them. This is where this word batza ends up in different ways, but he broke only one of them. Why? He explained why. Because the Torah says, luck too. It says they took two double bread. It doesn't say that they ate double bread. It says they took double bread. So this is where my whole theory about the no reenactment sort of starts to fall apart. And it's not exactly clear how you put all these things together, at least to me. Yeah.
There's also another complication. Is that on Shabbat, it's the only day you're told to have three meals. Well, traditional practice, it was you had two meals.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if you were to have one... if you really took double the portion, you would not have three loaves. You'd only have two. And so you'd be short one because supposed to have a meal.
Right.
One Friday night, one Saturday lunch, and one stood up sushi.
I mean, if the, yeah, okay.
Now, I don't know if that came about in the time of the Torah, but it came about rabbinically. But that means you couldn't simply survive on just two.
Right. Yeah, no, it's true. The clear, simple meaning
yeah.
Of the Torah is that they got double whatever they ate for a full day. That's what it means.
Fair enough. Yep.
So the question is, what does it mean that says that they took it? Okay, but we're not reenacting what they did. Okay, but in any event, it's not clear how to put these two things together. It's not, some people try and deal with, you know, more sophisticated, they break the pasuk up in source one into bits, and they say, well, you didn't need these words, so these words are really extra, and it's I didn't want to get involved there. It's so somehow, what emerges from here is that Rav Kahana felt, since it says they took them, it doesn't say they ate them, they just took them, so it's enough for us to reenact by taking the two loaves, and just like they took the two loaves, we're taking them now, I guess at the beginning of Friday, even though now it's during Shabbos, and it's the same symbolism. Okay, now that's fine. That's pretty straightforward, and that sounds like what we do. You take two, you cut one. Very good. Now, the story that comes after this is what's unclear. Rabbi Zera havabatza akula sherute. There's this very strange phrase here. Rabbi Zera would break on all of his allowance, which is more or less what that means. And obviously, that doesn't mean anything. We need to translate that a little bit better. Okay, yeah, akula sherute, on all of his allowance, or all of what he allowed for himself.
His portion.
His portion, something like that. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. Ravina asked or exclaimed to Ravashi, "Vaha michse karav tanuta." He's going to look like a ravenous person that just wants to eat a lot. This is a bad thing, right? It's not good in terms of the Gemara to look like a person who wants to eat and eat and eat and eat. Someone that takes a tremendous amount of food. He takes like a glutton. Sure, that's the right word. Amar le kevan dechol yom alo avid. So he answers, "Don't worry about this point about being a glutton, since he doesn't do this on any other day, he's doing it now, lo mechse karav tanuta. He does not look like a glutton, like a ravenous person." The question is, what exactly was going on here? What did he do that he cut? He cut a really big piece? Like, is that the problem? What exactly did Rabbi Zera do that was different than what we were describing before? Yeah.
Well, it sounds like he took one, but he wasn't going to, he took two, but he was only going to always eat one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just like hoarding. Like, this, why would you take two?
I mean, this is a new person who presumably is doing something new that wasn't done before. So the previous person also took two, and he cut one.
But here, I think he cut two.
Okay.
He cut all of his allowance, so he cut the both of them.
That's a possibility.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure what the shift was, right? He took to, so there's two options. One of them is that Rashi says this is the first possibility here. Naka tarte take two. He held them in his hand because it says they took. This is what we saw before. This is the first story, which implies holding, but it doesn't say that they broke two. And then break on all of his allowance means he cut off a huge piece, a big piece which is enough for the entire meal. Sometimes you have a meal, so you cut a piece for yourself at the beginning, right? They didn't have sliced bread. This was before they could say this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, because sliced bread didn't exist yet. So they cut a piece, you cut a piece and you eat it, and then later you cut another piece and you eat that one. Okay, and then that's how you go. But what kula sherute, all his allowance, means he cut a huge piece which was big enough for his whole meal. The goal was to honor Shabbat and also to appear to love the Shabbat meal, since he's showing that I really want to eat a lot during this meal. And that was the problem. That's why they responded, oh, you can't cut such a huge piece. You're going to look like a glutton and it's not good. So according to Rashi, we're fine. He still took two loaves and he cut one of them, but he just cut a really big piece. That's one view here. And that's where the problem is. The Rashba, a different commentator, says no, it says exactly what you said before, which is that he cut both of them. What it means, he cut all of his allowance, is he had two loaves in front of him, and he cut them both. Nearly, it appears, he quotes Rashi before, he has problems with it, nearly debatza al kol hakikarot. It means he cut up all the loaves. And since we said initially that the person took two, Rav Kahana took two and cut only one, now the second story is saying Rabbi Zera did something else. The first story was that he took two and he cut one. Rabbi Zera did something else. Batza akul hukikarot. He cut up all the loaves that were in front of him. And this is what it means that he looks like a glutton, because now you understand very well. If I cut a little bit of a big piece, okay, sort of look like a... If I cut all the bread, I have two loaves of bread, three loaves of bread, and I'm showing that I want to eat all three loaves of bread in one meal, that's a lot of bread. So now you really look like a glutton, and that could be problematic. It doesn't mean that he ate them all, but it means that he looked like he was planning to eat them all, which is problematic.
Either that or Rashi said that so to take away the, you know, he's trying to take away the fact that he's not really,
who's at his table.
Perhaps, yeah.
He gave a lot of people at his table that.
But it wasn't apparently the common practice, you know, to cut this much. So this was like a big deal. Okay, so here you see two stories emerge. According to Rashi, we're all good. We just take two, cut one, and we're done. According to the second view, there's two views here. One view says you should pick up two and cut one, and one view says you should cut them both. You should cut maybe all of them. If you have two or three or four challahs, you should cut everything. The idea of making a meal in honor of Shabbos is to show that there's no holds barred. I'm ready to cut. I don't want to put this bread away and keep it for later. I'm going to cut all the bread that's in front of me. Everything is available to be eaten.
But is that also some people make a little cut? In the
That's coming.
Okay.
That's coming. That's the next section called the slice. Yeah. That's coming. Okay.
Only the Jews can do this.
This is like so complicated. It's really amazing. If you like, at the end, after I went through this, I realized how much stuff there is when you take the challahs and you cut them. There's tons of stuff happening. Like, a lot. It's very complicated. It's not a simple practice.
But it's not very spiritual.
It's super symbolic, though. The whole point of it is that it's symbolizing that God provided for me, and it's Shabbat, and I want to show that I'm ready to eat everything that, you know, whatever. I'm not holding anything back. There's a lot going on. It's mechanical because, like a lot of the things we discuss here, it's mechanical because we just do them and we don't think about what's going on. But if once we're thinking about it, there's a lot there. It's hard almost to get everything together. Anyway, so what do we do? How does the practice devolve? So the Shulchan Aruch explains things along the lines of what Rashi said, our first view here. And this is what he says. Botzeya al shteki karot. A person cuts up, he breaks bread on two loaves. He holds both of them in his hand, and he cuts the bottom one. We'll come back to the point about the bottom one afterwards. That's another complication. But he holds both of them in his hand, and he cuts just one of them. So you see...
Like this?
Yes, yeah, so you have to hold them. We'll see. There's a whole juggling act, which may occur. Flipping.
I hope at the end you tell me that I'll be able to do the hamotzi too, then, right? Okay.
That's also possible.
That's one question.
That's not an issue.
It's a bit of a side question. Why is bread the only food that you have to watch for?
Why is bread the only? Because the assumption is that bread is the fundamental staple food. And I mean, in antiquity, it was the fundamental staple food. And so the idea, there's a concept of birkat hamazon, where you have to, you know, bench at the end. The Torah requires benching. So you have to bench at the end of your meal. And the idea is that in parallel to that, when you're preparing yourself to eat this staple food, which will create the benching, you also have to wash your hands. It's part of like the... Mm-hmm. This is the most typical kind of meal. That's really what a meal is. Other stuff, you eat it, it's not really a meal.
Right.
It might be, if you eat a lot of cake or something, it might become a meal. You know, by accident, if you eat like a ton of cake. But other things can't really create a meal. Maybe wine sometimes. So the Shulchan Aruch we see says that you can break. You should take two loaves and you can hold one of the. You hold them in your hand and you break just one. The Vilna Gaon said no. Why should we do that? Let's cut all the bread. There's a background point here, which is that the Zohar says that you should have 12 challahs on Shabbos, because there's 12 challahs which are parallel to the 12 showbreads, the Lechem Hapanim in the Beit HaMikdash. They would change, they had these breads inside the, like, the Kodesh, inside the that enclosed area where the menorah was and other stuff was. So they had a table with showbreads on it, and they would replace them every week on Shabbat. So the Zohar says that there's a parallel idea. We have our table, as we'll see a little bit later. The table also is sort of like part of the Beit HaMikdash, in some sense, like an altar. So you should have 12 breads. So, so this plays a factor here also, because if you cut two every meal, you started with six, you cut them into two, you can sort of look at each half as its own thing, and then you have 12. So that's a separate concern. But that's not the primary thing that the Vilna Gaon says. Vilna Gaon says, "Ubotseya al shtei chalot shleimot." You cut two full breads. Dehainu, that is to say, that you cut both of them together. You cut through both challahs. And so too, chen kol seuda, that you do that every Shabbos meal, and also every Yantiv meal, kedat harashba azal, because we saw this was an opinion in the Gemara, opinion amongst the commentators, that what the Gemara means is, at least one view is you're supposed to cut both of them. You're supposed to cut everything in front of you. Nimtza l'kol ha-Shabbat kulo shisha chalot. So what we find, that over the course of Shabbat, you need to have six challahs, which is a lot of challah, mechuvan al pi ha-Zohar, and this is now aligned to the opinion in the Zohar. Upam achad, this is an anecdotal statement about the life of the Vilna Gaon. One time, hayu munachim lefanav kama chalot ubatza et kulan. There were several challahs in front of the Vilna Gaon, more than two, and he cut all of them. Because we saw, this was also indicated, maybe the idea here is that you're supposed to cut everything that's in front of you to show there's nothing held back. So this was the practice of the Vilna Gaon. It is the practice of lots of people. It's actually also my practice, whatever. I just have like one little challah and one bigger challah. Yeah, it just means that one of the challahs is generally very small. But to cut through both of the challahs at the meal, it's not so uncommon. A lot of people don't do it. Some people do it.
But you know, I do the same thing. But that would be, you know, from what we've read here, that would be going against the principle of why, you know, you're supposed to have two loaves, right? So I know it's Lechem Mishnah, you can have it. It's a bit of cheating. But they're all supposed to be the showbread. They're all supposed to be the same size.
Yeah. So
you know. So
I don't know. I mean, I you know, interested
you
in the.
You cut both of them. You said.
I do. I cut both of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like you slice it, or you just cut
you
it in
slice
half?
Both. Cut. It depends on how many people are there, right? If there's, you know, usually we have my wife makes smaller challahs. We cut them both in half, and then we, you know, either we cut them up, we'll save half for later. It means there's lots of leftover challah generally. We've had to work on
and also
the size,
cut, not tear.
Right. So we're specifically talking about cutting. I think the assumption is just that it's more.
I tear.
Nice. It's nice. Yeah. Some people tear, but I don't know if the idea. I think the idea is just that it's nicer to.
Yeah.
To we'll see a little bit more about the technique of cutting in a moment, but yeah, I think the point you could break them, or if you have a pull apart, that's great. Also, pull aparts are cool. Pull aparts will be very useful. We'll see in a moment. Mm-hmm. Pardon?
I've never bought a pull apart.
Yeah, so I've encountered them once in a while. So this is the practice that many people have. Okay, so this is what we have in terms of, we have to have two challahs. How many of the challahs do you cut? Some, the basic view, everything, the more common practice is to cut one of them, but there are significant groups that cut both. Okay. Now we want to look at a little bit, which one do you cut? Which, if you're cutting one, which is the one that you cut? See, I
the
told
nice
you, this doesn't end.
I
what?
The nicer looking one.
You would presume maybe if you're, you know, thinking the nicer looking one. But for Kabbalistic reasons, once again, which I don't understand, I don't know them, and in fact, we are not, you know, privy to them, given the discussion here. It just says the reason is because of Kabbalah. You cut different ones at different meals. So we saw already, the Shulchan Aruch mentioned, you take both of them, and you cut the bottom one, which presumes, of course, there is a bottom one.
On the Friday night.
Which means they're stacked. On Friday night, right. Mm-hmm. There is, or at least one of them is sort of leaned over the other. There has to be a bottom. That's what we're assuming. So this is what the Shulchan Aruch writes. Botzei al shtei kikarot shleimot. You cut two full, you take two loaves, you hold both of them, and you cut the bottom one. And this is the Rama adds here, this is the note. When it says note here, it's like a different person who is writing commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama. V'davka b'leile Shabbat. You cut the bottom one specifically on Shabbat night. Aval b'yom ha-Shabbat, o b'leile yom tov, botzea al ha-Yona. But during the day on Shabbat, and on all meals during Yantiv, you cut the top one. Yes.
I was at a men's shiur, and I got a sort of a bit of an erotic explanation of the whole thing, and there's that symbolism, male female.
Okay.
On I won't obviously talk about it now, but there is that was what they had raised, that there's at night, morning, you know, so There is that.
Okay, I'm sure. He says here the Tam who is al derech Kabbalah. There's Kabbalistic reasoning behind this. I don't know. But this is the idea. I just know this is where we get into a little bit of juggling. So that, you know, whatever. You can do with this what you will. But you have to cut the bottom one, right? But there's a separate problem called Ein Ma'avirin al HaMitzvot. If you have a mitzvah in front of you that you have to do, you shouldn't reach over past it and get something else and do something else. So we're assuming now you made the bracha and you're supposed to eat the bread. That's the goal. So if you have them on, one on top of the other and you're supposed to eat the bottom one, then you can't reach past, you shouldn't be reaching past the top one to like get it out of the way to eat the bottom one. That's not a good idea. You should just eat whatever bread is closest to you. And it could be in general, that's why you eat the top one. If they're on top of each other, then you just eat the one that's closest to you and it's the most readily available. So how do you get to the bottom one? What do you do, right? The top one is in your way. So there's two suggestions that are made. The less interesting one is you sort of just lean one on top of the other. So if you have, like, it'll be like this, right? This will be now considered the bottom one, and this will be the top one, and then you're sitting here, and you can just access it, and it's no problem. The more interesting thing is to have them stacked one on top of another before you start Kiddush, and then before you make Hamotzi, you flip them. This establishes this one as the bottom one and this one is the top one. And before you make a motzi, you flip them over. So now the bottom one is on top.
Is that considered okay as well? Is that why you did a small little cut to denote that was the top one?
No, we're getting to the small little cut. There's another reason for this. I told you, it never ends. It's so complicated. Challah is just unbelievable. And it's why I realized at some point we've got to talk about challah because there's like 15 different things that you need to know. So that is, if you ever are at someone's house, I haven't seen it as commonly done, but they like flip over the challahs in the middle.
Never seen that.
That's why they're flipping over the challahs in the middle.
Which one do you want me to cut? I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Now so, I know. I'll put the one on the bottom. He doesn't have to ask
if
me
there is no bottom one, I don't know what you do. I guess you just cut whichever one you...
The bottom. I'll have the bottom.
I'm getting a treat tomorrow. I'm joining the other group.
This is it. It's too much. Did you see someone made a skit about what would happen if Jews had
a Christmas tree.
Had trees?
It would be you have to cut it down.
And how do you get it to be a live tree? And has the sap in it or not?
Rashi says a flicker.
You know, don't run so fast because next year we're going to come and talk about trees. Pardon?
I saw it in person.
Yeah.
So was it in Toronto?
Highlight Live.
This is like a shtick.
2 years ago, had him.
We were going to get him.
I couldn't stop laughing.
It's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah. The Shechta tree. The street. All things wrong. Anyway.
That's good. Okay, so that's what we have. That's in terms of which one do you make a bracha on? So far we have two challahs. You have to cut either one or both of them, and you have to eat the bottom one on Shabbos night and the top one on Shabbos day and every other meal.
Do you have to put salt on both of them?
So we'll get the salt.
Wait,
is the last.
You say it only has to be flour, or you can't use spelt?
You can use spelt. That was just by way of example that in normally speaking in the rules of bracha, wheat flour is considered to be preferable to other things. Unless you really like spelt, then you should eat the spelt one first. But you can use spelt, no problem. That's a whole other ball game, which is very technical. What can go into challah? And this is the Sephardim and Ashkenazim have different views about what can be in a challah.
Except for the Omer. The Omer is... Is it always for wheat? Because it's between Pesach and Shavuot, it's barley, right?
Right. So in this case...
It's always wheat?
No, the Omer in that Pasuk is actually just a measure. Right. So you can have an Omer of anything. Okay, so now let's talk about the slice. We've all seen this. You're somewhere, they're making thing, and you make a little slice, a little tiny slice on the challah, and then you make a motzi, and then you eat it. What is going on with the slice? So you're marking it, you're putting it, what are we doing with the slice? So in general, when you eat bread during the week, not on Shabbos, we have this rule. As we mentioned, it's preferable to use a full loaf. But there's a problem. We want to keep the time between when I make the bracha and when I start eating the bread to a minimum. And there's a concern that all kinds of different things that you might do in that interim would be a hefsek, which is a technical issue. I made a you know, sort of a pause in between the bracha and doing the mitzvah. Right? This is where it's really bad. Actually, in between washing and making the bracha, which is where everyone's careful not to talk, is not as bad. You probably still shouldn't talk. But in between the bracha and the eating, you really can't do anything that's going to interrupt. So, as we also mentioned, people used to have full loaves of bread, and they would slice it at the table. It wasn't sliced before. So you have to think about, how much do I want, and let's make a proper slice. I don't want to cut off too much from the bread. So actually cutting the bread took a while. So there is a concern that if you make the bracha without doing any of the cutting, then by the time you cut the bread, that could be a hefsek. It certainly is going to add time, and it might even be part of this, one of these technical issues that there's too much time happening. So the suggestion that's made is very complicated during the week, which is, here we have it in source 10, you do as follows. Botzeah hapat. B'makom shenafa heitav. You're supposed to cut the bread, this is a sort of separate issue, at a spot where it's very well baked. Okay, that's not what we're interested in. V'yachtoch prusat habetzia. You should start to slice the slice that you're going to eat after you make hamotzi. But you shouldn't slice it too much. V'tzarech lachtoch me'at. You should cut it a little bit. Such that, you shouldn't slice it too much, because if you slice it all the way off, then it's not a complete bread anymore. And we want to make hamotzi on a complete loaf. So there's this tension. We want to have it on a complete loaf. On the other hand, you want to cut it, and you want to sort of have some of it cut so that it's not going to take forever to figure out where to cut and what to do and to cut the bread. So you should, and the definition of it being a complete loaf is, if I grab that slice and I pick it up, is the rest of the loaf going to come up with it, or it's going to break off and be separate? If it's going to break off, then it's already its own piece, even if it's still sort of attached. And if it's going to pick the rest of it up with it, then it's considered to be one. So you should cut it such that shim yochas beprusa yale shar kikarimo. If you will grab the slice, the rest of the loaf will come up with it. Shim lochan chashuv kaprusa, because otherwise it's considered like a separate slice. And v'yanichana mechuberet lapat, you should leave it in this way, so you sort of half cut the slice. V'yadchi levarech, and you make the bracha so that the bracha is on the complete loaf, and then you can pull it off very easily. It's pretty much ready to be eaten. You look very perplexed.
Why do you have to do it in the first place, though?
What do you mean?
Why do you have to put that?
So we're saying that there's
a long gap between you're washing your hands and doing and eating the bread.
Right. Otherwise, there's going to be a big break between when you make the bracha and when you actually mm-hmm. eat, because you have to figure out where to cut it. And I mean, I've never had this issue.
I promise you, I did not make this up.
This is a real thing. It's a concern.
So, if you're not going to slice the whole bread,
yeah.
Wait, but we do slice the whole bread.
We're talking about during the week. Okay, I just want to eat some bread.
So if you're going to make that little slice, so then I think what you said is that you make that slice from the piece that you're going to eat. So you should make that slice closer to the front than making it in the middle.
Right,
most people, I see, they make it in the middle.
So on Shabbos, it's one thing. But we're talking about now this halacha is not about Shabbos. It's just during the week. I have a loaf of bread. I want to eat the bread. It's better for me to make the bracha on the full loaf. But then you're going to have to figure out, like, where do I cut it? How much bread do I actually want? And apparently this is a very time-consuming thing. It may also be a technical thing, that if I cut it, it's considered a hefsek. It's considered interrupting between my bracha and the eating. Right, so that's what we're saying here. So this is this very complicated dance that you do, so that you will still have a complete loaf, but you'll be able to very quickly get your bread and eat it right after you make the bracha. So sort of clear. This is like this technical dance.
Technically.
It should be. I think it's
because
at the end.
If you cut it in the middle. If you put that slice in the middle, that means you're going to presumably.
Yeah.
You
so
need
that's
two cuts
not
to get
yeah.
that slice.
Right. You want to cut like somewhere over here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, good, very good. But do we do this on Shabbos too? This is the question. Should we also do this on Shabbos? So the Rama says no, because during the week, as we mentioned before, it's preferable to make a bracha on a full loaf than it is on a piece of a slice. You could make bracha on a slice. We do it all the time. We have sliced bread. A lot of times we don't have access to it's not even a thing. Maybe if you have a bagel, bagel's also usually sliced. Whatever, right? So normally speaking, this is not even a factor in most people's lives. And if they have, if you hold by the concept of mezonot bagels, there are bagels which are mezonot. Otherwise, it's bread.
If you prepare the bread for the bagel the same way you prepare the bread for the regular loaf, isn't
I think it's
left?
I think it's considered by most people bread. It is boiled first before it's baked, but I think that it's still baked. So maybe there's more discussion there that I'm aware of. But
if you're short, apparently you can take a bagel for your, like as a second.
Right. So the whole question is it whole? Yeah. If it's sliced in the middle, then you may be able to do this test actually. If you can pick up the top half and the bottom half will come with it, maybe it's considered whole. But in any event, so during our lives now, we don't encounter this as much. But it's just it's an issue of preference. What's better? It's better to eat it this way than that way. But on Shabbos, you really want to have the full loaves, right? We just talked about it. You have to have lechem mishnah. You're supposed to have two full loaves. This is something that you really want. And so in that case, we're scared because you can imagine that finding the sweet spot where you're slicing it and it's sort of sliced, but it's not so sliced that it's going to fall off. Like, unless you're an expert, that's really, you know, I would mess that up for sure. You'd cut it and then it would just fall apart.
Presumably, if it's not going to be, if the test is,
yeah.
If you can't cut very much then, especially if it's at the end.
Yeah, so
because
it's
the way
not,
the loaf is hanging.
Well, exactly. So I don't know. So the Ramah says that you're playing with fire. Don't do that. U'b'Shabbat lo yachtoch b'kikar adachar ha-bracha. On Shabbat, don't do this. Just cut it after you make the bracha. Might be a hefsek. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Just cut it afterwards. Kadesh yu hakikar shleimot. So that your bread, your loaves, your challahs will be whole when you make the bracha. That's more important. Great.
It's sorry to interrupt again, but it sounds like Dafka, he says, breaks the bread that's where it has been baked well. So if you put a slice there, it's not, presumably it's going to be harder, that crust is going to be hard enough, it's not going to fall
apart. It could be true. I don't know if that's the reason why you do that, but that's that incidentally may be true.
Yeah.
Okay, so fine. So we can already see, according to the Ramah, no problem. But you can imagine that this becomes something that some people want to do. So if we look at the Mishnah Berurah, where he's talking about making hamotzi on Shabbat, he says, look above, see above, what in whatever you want to call the Siman Kuf Samach Zayin in source 1 or chapter 167, which, what the Rama wrote there in the note, that a person should not cut the bread on Shabbat until after the blessing so that the loaf should be whole. But the careful ones, the medaktikim, have the custom to make a little sign for themselves on the bread before they make the bracha. So it's not entirely clear to me what exactly that is for. He doesn't explain it. Presumably, there I could think of two options. One is a pragmatic thing, which is that if I'm going to have to figure out where I'm going to slice, so now I figured it out, and now it's not going to take me that time to figure out where I'm going to cut from. I know right away I can put the knife there and cut. Yeah.
Has anybody ever, this is what comes to my mind now. You know, we don't, since we go to the bakery to buy bread or wherever.
Yeah.
You know, they take the challah off.
Yeah.
Right? So could it be that there's some symbolism in the fact that this is the piece of challah? This is actually the challah?
It could be. I mean, they take the challah off. The challah is gone. I don't think we're assuming that we're breaking off
the
challah.
No, I know. But most of us don't take challah. We buy a loaf that's already baked, so we're really not, we're enjoying the fact that somebody, some baker took the challah off.
So you're saying maybe this is like,
this
it's symbolic.
Almost symbolic that, you know, this is
it
the
could
challah.
Be. I've never seen somebody explain it. But it's clearly in line, at a primary level, it's clearly in line with this issue from before. Right? So either they're cutting it so that you know where to cut, or if you really want to be technical, they're cutting it because maybe this much slicing is now no longer considered an interruption. Once I did a little bit of slicing, it's okay. I'm not sure. One way or another, it's not. It seems like you should have to follow that slice through. If you're going to do a little thingy and then make hamotzi and then cut it somewhere else, that is totally not useful. And just as a, you know, pragmatically, I think it probably takes longer to get your knife back into the spot where that little thing, the indent, just out of, you know, when I've tried this, just find the indent.
Does it really matter, though? I mean, I guess with one of the explanations, it would matter.
Yeah, one of the explanations, this would not be a problem. I have two concerns here. One concern is, pragmatically, it takes a longer time to do this than to just cut it. And also, if you're not following through on that slice, then certainly this doesn't help you. The fact that I did, you know, if I pulled the sesame seed off the other side, that has nothing to do with the hefsek, right? You know, unless I'm following through on the slice that I made from before, which I don't know if people are careful to do or not. This is something that, as you see, some people do it and some people don't. The Mishnah Berurah says this is the medaktikim, the careful ones that are careful to do it. I have seen great people that also don't do it. So that is the slice. So by this point, we have two challahs, we've taken them, we've juggled them, we've made a thing on them, we sliced one or both of them. Then there's also another important part of the challahs, which is that we cover them. We don't usually cover bread during the week. Why are we covering the challahs? So here there are three reasons which are offered. The Gemara, the Talmud just says, has this description of someone coming to a table at night on Shabbos, and he says "Ein mevina ta shulchan ela im ken kidesh." It used to be that people ate off of these little tables. They had couches, and there would be like a little table, and everyone would get their own little table, and they would eat off of it. So what we're saying here is you don't bring out the little tables with the food, with the bread on it, until you've made kiddush first. Now that's the basic practice. But what if you did? What if they already brought them? You don't make everybody schlep the tables back. Poris mapu mekadesh. So you put something on top, you put a napkin on top of the table, and you make kiddush, and then you uncover it afterwards. That's the statement. And so what exactly the reason is there, we have a few different possible options. The two options here are quoted in this Tosfot. One reason is what's quoted in the She'iltot, so that the meal will be brought in honor of Shabbat. The idea is, it's sort of like when you go to a restaurant and I've never been in a restaurant where they did this, but I've seen it in movies. You go to a restaurant, they have like a silver tray with like the huge dome thing, and they pull it off, and it's like, ta-da, here's your fancy food for your meal. So it's like that. I want to show that the meal is an official meal which is being instituted for Shabbos. That's the point. So I cover the bread, and then I make kiddush, whatever, and then when I'm ready to eat, I like pull it away, and it shows that this is a Shabbos meal. That's one possibility. The other possibility, does anyone know offhand any of the other? There are two more. Two more reasons. Embarrassment, yes.
And the mud, of course.
That's the one that we know, and the mud. Right, so those are the other two. So
I don't know the mud.
When I picked up the mud, the dew covered the mud, it would not spoil.
Right.
So the Seder, if you're going to use the wine for any, you covered the matzah. Otherwise, you show the matzah.
Right, so that, it could be part of that same
idea.
Same idea, yeah. So the second reason here is the man that he's quote. Some explains this to remember the man, which would not fall on Shabbat and Yom Tov, and had dew from above and below, and the man in the middle. That's what is described. There's like a dew fell, and man fell on top, and dew fell on top to keep it safe. So on this basis, some people hold you need to have actually like a napkin underneath the challah, and a napkin on top of the challah, or maybe the tablecloth is enough, and I don't want to get involved
in that.
That's
why people make the kreplach, by the way, also. That's supposed to remind them of the man inside between.
Could be. Kreplach.
Anyway, just a side comment.
Yeah, we'll see if we can talk about kreplach. I didn't hear that one. There's a million explanations of kreplach, and the reason is because it has no actual, like basic explanation that we can sort of stick our teeth in. So everyone just says it's good. It's a lot of fun.
So
okay.
You're supposed to put a cloth underneath the
cloth? Some people say that you should. Some people say if you have a tablecloth, that's fine.
What about a plate? I mean, does that
the plate is not a... Is
like a silver tray.
So you have the challah on a...
I've never seen anyone that does it, let's just put it that way.
A cloth underneath?
Yeah, I've never seen anyone that put a cloth, a table thing.
You have a challah board, and you put the cloth...
Yeah, maybe the challah board counts, or the tablecloth counts, or something counts.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were...
So,
the last reason is this reason about embarrassing the bread. It's not an issue of embarrassment, we understand, right? The bread is not getting embarrassed, it doesn't have feelings, it's bread. But there is a halachic reality that normally speaking, like we mentioned, there's different kinds of bread that you should make a bracha on first. If you have several different types of food, and specifically several different types of food from the seven Shivat Haminim, the seven different species that grow in Israel. So the Torah says, Eretz Chitau, Sarav, Geffen, Teina, Rimon, Eretz Zeit Shemen, Udvash. And on that list, chita, which is wheat, comes for, or, and whatever, the grains in general, come before grapes. So normally the protocol is that I would make a bracha on a grain-based food before I would make the bracha on wine. So that, if you're just eating during the week, that's what you do. You make a motzi, you can make a guffin afterwards, and you don't, so here we're switching the order, and because we're switching the order, so you cover the challah, so it's sort of like not here. So, and then I make the bracha on, because, yeah.
So kilo, it's not losing its importance.
Right, we want to recognize there is a hierarchy that we're supposed to be following. We're breaking with protocol because you have to make kiddush, and for kiddush you need wine. You could make kiddush on bread also, but whatever. If kiddush, you need wine, and so we're using the wine, and that's what we're covering. So those are the basic three reasons. And there's a whole tumult of differences. What happens if you make kiddush on bread? People point out all kinds of stuff, which I also want to discuss. Those are the basic reasons for covering the challah. The last thing here is the salt. What is the deal with the salt? Suddenly on Shabbos, we find that we have salt coming together with the bread. Why is that happening? So, right, that's the last thing, at least, that I could think of in terms of challah. So, why exactly do you need salt? There's originally, the issue was, in the times of the Talmud, the bread was very coarse, and it often didn't taste very good. It was really hard, and it was had bits of stones in it, whatever. It was not so easy to totally refine it, so it had sometimes little bits of pebble. It was not nice. And so in order to eat it, and so it would be appetizing, they would dip it into something. They would dip it into salt, or dip it into a relish, or dip it into chumah, whatever. They'd dip it into something, and then you'd eat it, and then it's more palatable that way. So the basic idea was that in the times of the Gemara, this is what we see here in the beginning of Source 15, lo yivatza, ad sheyaviu lefanav melech oliftan, lelefet bo prusat habetzia. You shouldn't break bread until they've brought in front of you salt or some kind of relish that you could dip the bread into, because you don't want to eat the bread when it doesn't taste nice. It's not good. You're making a bracha, and so it should be tasty when you eat it. But if the bread is nikiya, what's called pat nikiya, ohi mituvelet betavlino bemelech kein shelanu, or if it's very refined bread, or it has spices in it, or salt it baked into it, or crusted around it, or something, so it already has stuff to make it taste good, then you don't need, you technically speaking, don't need the salt or this relish at all. Right? If you have so our bread today is very refined, it tastes great, challah is amazing, you don't need, technically speaking, salt for the same reason that they needed it.
Or raisins in the challah.
Right, or whatever's in there. It's good. Even if you just have straight water and flour, it's so refined and so, it tastes great. There's no problem. You're not going to have issues.
There's an old midrash, I don't know if you've heard the midrash, where, the angels go to visit Lot.
Yeah.
And then they go out, after the whole incident, and then she turns into
salt. She turns into salt, yeah.
Did you hear the midrash? Why she turned duck into salt? Because when the angels asked for, he fed them bread.
Yeah.
Lot fed them bread, and they asked for salt. And she refused to give them salt.
Yeah, because it was a big commodity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, so we see this as reference in different places.
But is that for that reason, the softening of the bread, is that really what...
That's the basic reason in the... Well, we'll see, there's going to be an added reason.
Like,
yeah.
I thought because they salted when they were doing sacrifices.
Right, so exactly. That's the second thing which is coming right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the basic sort of bare bones halachic reason is that if the bread is not going to taste good, you should make it taste good before you eat it, and so you should put salt on it. Now, that's not a problem for us, so why do we have salt? So here the Ramah adds to the Shulchan Aruch, u'mikol makom mitzvah lehaniach al kol shulchan melech kodem sheivatza. It's still a mitzvah to put salt on the table. It's not even clear you have to put it on the food. You should just have salt on the table before you break bread. Why? Ki ha-shulchan domeh le-mizbeach. Because a person's table is like the altar. It's like the mizbeach in the Beit HaMikdash. Va'achila korban, and when you eat, it's like offering a sacrifice. V'ne'amar al kol korbanecha takriv melech. And as you said, it says, the Torah says, that there was this concept that they put salt onto all the sacrifices in the temple, and it saves you from punishment. That's a good thing. And the Mishnah Berurah adds that particularly amongst the Kabbalists, the practice was to dip it in three times. There's a concept of metikat hadin, if you have some sort of judgment, bad judgment, which is coming. So this is a way of softening the judgment. Yeah.
So it makes sense then, which I'm a little confused though. if you're having the bread for your meal and it has you're eating a lot of salt.
Yeah.
You know, you wash your hands three times, once for, well, some people told whatever, two, yeah, or three, depends on who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you eat the bread, and then, you know, after you put it on, you have to wash again. So is it because of that salt that is in the bread that,
so,
you have to,
yeah, the you basic know, reason for my machronim, for washing after the meal, is because of what's called melach stomi, Sodom salt. That, I mean, I think in modern days, most salt is sodium chloride. But there is a small amount of magnesium chloride, which is used now. It's virtually non-existent. But if you just dredge salt out of the ocean, a small amount of it is magnesium chloride, which is very dangerous if you rub it in your eyes. I'm not a chemist, but this is apparently true. It's very dangerous if you rub it in your eyes, if you get it in other places. So the basic reason for the Mayim Achronim was, if you had salt on your hands from the meal, you would wash it off before you would bench, and then you wouldn't be... So Tosfot already says in the Gemara that in France, we don't have... We don't have the salt. We don't know what this is.
Is that why you're not supposed to do on Shabbat?
My Achronim. Yeah.
Is that what you're supposed to do on Shabbat?
And, I mean, presumably not. You're supposed to do it all the time.
Oh, okay.
Anytime you eat, you should do it. And the same thing is true with the salt, by the way. This halacha is not from the laws of Shabbat. This halacha is from normally eating during the week. I was looking to find people to talk about it. I just saw one article that said, I have no idea why people don't do this during the week. People got used to doing it on Shabbat. Not only do you have it on the table, you put it out and you dip it inside, and we really follow it 100%, even though technically speaking, maybe you could just have it on the table, whatever. But this is this practice of having the salt. So
in the Haggadah, that tells us, right? You know, why do we dip twice, right?
During
the
week, normally
during
speaking,
the rest of the time we dip once.
So during the rest of the week, we dip zero. We don't dip. It's not a thing that we usually do. So here we go. We have the challahs. You've covered them. You took two. You cut one or two. You made an indentation maybe inside in one of them. And you have salt on the table, and you've juggled them, and you've done everything. So you realize now, by the time you start eating it, it's a whole exercise. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes in terms of preparing the challahs. So I'll speak for 2 minutes about kreplach. I don't want to go over time. Here's what I found about kreplach. Okay, the practice in terms of kreplach now is to eat it basically. I mean, people have different things, but as I understand, the classic European practice was three times a year: on Erev Yom Kippur, on Hoshana Rabbah, and on Purim. Those are the 3 days when you eat kreplach. Where is kreplach from? The earliest, so I saw somebody wrote an article for an Oxford symposium on food. Someone wrote an article about kreplach. And it's fascinating. She said you can see sort of historically where stuff emerges, because when they started making these different foods, then people had to figure out in terms of halacha, what kind of bracha do you make on it? Is this something where if you make a lot of it, you're going to have to take challah out of the dough? Is this bread? Is it not bread? Is it considered like one food or two foods where that's relevant? So the earliest mention of it, of something along these lines, it's called like a ravolio or something, which is mentioned in a 13th century book, the Orza Rua. It's a famous halachic work, which is parallel to the word ravioli. I mean, they probably are the same thing. It's basically the same thing as a kreplach. And actually, apparently,
it wasn't ravioli.
The person argued that this is actually the earliest reference to ravioli that they have. And so, if you know, if that interests you, okay. So
the Italians.
It wasn't from an Italian text. It was from this text in 13th century Jewish text that she apparently, supposedly, she's an expert on it. So she knows when ravioli was mentioned first. So we eat it three times a year. Kreplach, the etymology is not exactly clear. Some people say that it's like an acronym. The kuf or the k is for Yom Kippur, the resh is for Hoshana Rabbah, and the pe or the p is for Purim. Kreplach, some people say it's because you smash it. There's a smashing element involved in all of these three holidays, right? On Yom Kippur, you smash your heart. On Hoshana, you smash the Hoshanas. On Purim, you smash the table for Haman. So there's a smashing that happens. Why do we eat them? So there, you know, again, there's a million and one explanations for why we eat them. And I think part of the reason is because there's no real, they're just like, people ate them at some point. I don't think it was a real thing. But on Purim, people say, because the idea of Purim is that you're finding the miracle which was hidden inside of something. It looked like one thing and really was something else. So it's kreplach. And on Yom Kippur and Hoshana Rabbah, Rabbah, which are parallel. Hoshana Rabbah is the end of the period, the final end of the period of judgment. So the idea is that we want God to sort of cover over our sins and not look at them, and, you know, the dark meat is covered over by lighter stuff. Sometimes in Purim they made milchik ones also. And there's an interesting halachic note about it, which is this considered one food or two foods? And that comes up twice a year. On Purim you have to send mishloach manon. And mishloach manon, you're supposed to send two foods. So if I make a kreplach, is that considered two foods or not? Some people argued it is. And also on Erev Tisha B'Av, when you eat the Suda Mafseket before you start the fast, you're only supposed to eat one dish during that meal. It's considered nice, extravagant to have more than one dish. Is a kreplach considered one dish or two dishes? Mm-hmm. So they're also maybe considered two dishes, so people didn't eat. Okay, that's as much as I found out about
kreplach. Wow.
Question, if I may.
Certainly.